Spirit Blade Underground, September 30th, 2011.
Warning, access restricted. Enter password. DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Spirit Blade Underground, September 30th, 2011.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast. I'm Peter Franson, the creator of Spirit Blade Productions. We're bringing you Christian sci-fi and fantasy that's unsterilized, unsafe, and unleashed on your ears and imagination. You can check out what we're doing and grab lots of cool downloads over at www.spiritblade.net. All right, updates.
File access. Update.
Next week, as I return to developing the songs for Spirit Blade 3, I'm also going to be starting a new daily regimen of vocal exercise. While re-recording some vocals for the special edition of Spirit Blade, I noticed that my vocal endurance and some of my upper range flexibility had weakened since recording for Dark Ritual. Spirit Blade was recorded just a couple of years after I graduated from college as a vocal performance major. Dark Ritual was recorded shortly after 2 years of serving as a worship pastor, which involved regular vocal exercise. But since then, I haven't had a vocal regimen built into my daily routine, and it's finally begun to show, at least to me. I'm going to continue producing music now and then after Spirit Blade 3, but I don't really plan to do as much of it. Still, I want Spirit Blade 3 to have the best voice possible for me, so kind of like an actor... this is what I'm telling myself to feel cool, maybe. Kind of like an actor who goes to the gym for 3 months before filming that superhero movie. I'm going to be working my voice as hard and as safely as I can so that when it comes time to record my song vocals for Spirit Blade 3, I'll have all the options I want in terms of vocal range and tonal qualities. Part of me is looking forward to getting my voice back in shape, but another part of me dreads adding more to my day that does not directly advance the development of a new project. That's probably the hardest thing about, the most frustrating thing about what I do is that it's like most of it is not creative. I would love for it to be creative all day, but most of it is not at all creative. It's just monotony, stuff that has to be done. But, you know, for every grand vision, there are numerous details that have to be stacked one on top of the other in order to assemble the final product. And if this has to be one of them, well, at least it's going to be more enjoyable than marketing. There's a new free audio drama that you guys can check out. At long last, I am able to present the newest audio drama from the Spirit Blade Underground Alliance, the online creative community of volunteers that's sponsored by Spirit Blade Productions. Why do I say at long last? Well, because this project has actually been in development longer than any other project the Alliance has released. It was the first script I gave a green light to and the first to hold auditions for, but for reasons that still puzzle me, God has chosen again and again to delay the development of this project. Three different mixers have taken it on, and both of the first two had to step away from it because of some difficult things that came into their lives that were totally beyond their control. It wasn't like, I'm being irresponsible and I have to duck out. And it was like just stuff that happens from time to time in life just slams both of them. And it was just really odd what was going on. So after many more months of searching for an interested mixer, a new mixer joined the Alliance and eagerly took on this project a few months ago. He's done a wonderful job, and as of I think it was Wednesday this week, I posted the audio drama on the Spirit Blade Underground Alliance page. It's called the DSI Files Unlucky 7, and it's set in a future where special agents sanctioned by the church are sent out to investigate and deal with significant spiritual events or threats. The script is a cool blend of sci-fi and the supernatural, which you guys know I dig, and I hope you guys enjoy checking it out as well. You can download it for free right now at the Spirit Blade Underground Alliance page. That's spiritblade.net/alliance. spiritblade.net/alliance. Hope you check that out. On the show today, the final installment of my coverage of DC Comics' New 52 as they relaunch their universe for new readers and try to refresh it for old readers. Some surprising hits and misses as DC gambles big to reinvigorate their brand, and I'm covering the last of that bunch of DC Comics today. All right, I think that's it. Have I forgotten anything? No, I haven't. Okay, let's get to it.
Primary features.
Comic book review.
Activated.
Well, I picked up another load, really the last load this month of DC's final comics of the first month of their new universe. Here are my thoughts on, well, all the ones I picked up. Green Lantern New Guardians. Given that this book shares a subtitle with a terrible concept that came out of the lame Millennium crossover way back in the 80s. By the way, do I get some extra geek credit for that reference? Anyway, because of that, I was reluctant to check it out. I just had bad memories of that crossover. But as a diehard Green Lantern fan, I knew I at least had to give it a shot. This issue is almost pure setup, mainly of Kyle Rayner's character. It retells his origin with a few modifications that make him a little bit less of a loser. You know, if you are familiar with Kyle Rayner's original Green Lantern origin, he was coming out of like a nightclub and he was like hammered, I think, and about to puke. Well, this time he wasn't hammered and he wasn't fixing to puke in the back alley, just urinate, but he was exiting this kind of bar place to go out to a... I think this time it was a bar, and he was hanging out with some friends at a bar, and the other time was like a rave or something like that. Anyway, so a few modifications this time make him less of a loser and firmly establish him as having been specifically chosen to bear the ring. Geoff Johns has kind of been retconning that a little bit, because in the original presentation of his origin back in the 90s, it was totally at random. The Guardian was just like barely alive and was like, "Ugh, you'll have to do," and he gave him the ring, you know. But over time, and especially recently with Geoff Johns, although a little bit of this had been done before Geoff Johns did this, they've started to kind of change it to make us believe that it was always really a decision, a choice. But they've totally just wiped away any doubt with this retelling of the origin. Like, it was on purpose. He was chosen, and it's a done deal. The other elements of the issue set up what will be coming, which is still very unclear. But I gotta say, I'm interested. It's a quick read. With a little less dialogue or other kinds of text to give it meat, and while I hope that won't be the norm, because I like to feel like I've read 3 or 4 bucks worth when I read a comic book, I'm still on board, at least until they make it clear what this series will be about, which I hope they'll do soon. That's kind of a little bit risky on their part to invest more in... I don't want to say they really invested a ton in Kyle Rayner's character, but just kind of doing all the setup that they're doing instead of getting into the plot of the new story. But several comics are doing that, and for character-driven guys like me, I like it. I'm into it. I don't need the story to get off to this really, rockin' start. But for other folks, for other types of readers, that is a little bit of a gamble on DC's part, I think. All right, next up, Superman. This book is in trouble, or at least I hope it is. I hope... it does terrible in the short term anyway, of course, and that DC quickly recognizes that they need to go in a different direction with their handling of the most iconic character in comic book history. Unlike the current story in Action Comics, Superman #1 picks up where Superman is supposed to be at today, whereas Action Comics is retelling kind of his first year as a superhero. So Superman #1 is where he's at today, establishing his current status quo as a character. So what is that status quo in a nutshell? Well... to me, it was no different from what I saw in Action Comics #1, except for a different costume. And by the way, the costume changes are now not even the least of my concerns. Both Clark and Superman seem a lot like the same person. Really odd, given that DC is hoping to get non-comics fans in on this comic. Non-comics fans who won't as easily suspend disbelief when it comes to the whole glasses are the perfect disguise thing, Superman and Clark are both always frowning in some way, either in anger or disappointment. But mostly anger. Now, there is one little smile in this issue, and it's while he's threatening to drown some bad guys if they don't surrender. So, I don't know. Again, as with Action Comics #1, they seem to be pulling specifically from Superman's, quote, social crusader roots to the exclusion of the rest of this character's history, giving us someone who comes across like a self-righteous college kid who just discovered public protesting. That's especially the vibe I got in one scene where Clark is talking to Lois. His dialogue as Superman is also surprisingly old-school sounding in this issue. As he prepares to throw a giant object at the bad guy, he says, "So far, you've been doing all the pitching in this game. Now let's see if you can catch." Now, I could see that being, a little bit more appropriate for, say, like the kind of writing I do in audio drama where you have to kind of tell a little bit what's going on but try to hide the fact that you're telling. But the rest of the script has plenty more moments like that, which are like a tell don't show writing philosophy, and I think that is the wrong approach in comic books. Although there are a number of better directions you could take this character compared to where they are, for my taste, it would have been great to see a new kind of Clark persona that Kal-El puts on. You know, maybe like a socially awkward gaming nerd who is really good at expressing himself in writing, you know, so he's a great writer, but he's lousy in conversation. I think that would be kind of an interesting take. I think it would resonate with a lot of kind of current geeks and even just non-socially awkward geeks, but people that just like gaming and stuff like that and, you know, can understand a little bit of the socially awkward geek culture. And I think it would probably fit in better with what Siegel and Schuster had in mind, where it's like they were thinking of this weak, you know, this kind of weakling, you know, nerd that was totally underappreciated and just ignored by everybody. I think they could really make that come alive today in a cool way by pulling inspiration out of gaming and geek and nerd culture, but missed opportunity here. You know, so anyway, I would love to see that kind of take on Clark Kent. I'd love to see a Superman who is who's a strong, encouraging example of service and self-sacrifice, who's there to help people in the moment rather than solve the world's problems at their root cause. Recently, in the last, I don't know, 10 years, maybe since 9/11, DC has often called Superman the fireman of the DC universe. He's there, he saves the day, he puts out fires, and he goes. He's not like, he doesn't have some kind of a political agenda or something like that. But this is like they've wiped away kind of the fireman aspect, and now he's a social crusader. He's the exact opposite of what he's been the last 10 years, and I think in many ways very different from what Superman's been for the last 30, 40 years. So again, this would be my take, but DC could do any number of things that I think would work better than what they're doing now with Superman. I have a sneaking suspicion that no one at DC knows how to effectively write the iconic Superman anymore. When we see knockoff heroes based on icons like Superman, Batman, Wolverine, or Captain America, we see through the name and the costume, and we say, well, this guy's like a so-and-so ripoff, because the essence of those iconic characters is much more than their costumes. But DC seems to be taking away Superman's essence as it has been established over the last handful of decades. If you took away this Superman's costume and name, I think the Man of Steel would be the last character that would likely come to mind. Now, DC can naturally do what they want. You know, despite my rapid fire pace of talking, that's just because I got a lot to cover. But these are just funny books at the end of the day. I'm not bothered by what they're doing with Superman. I'm just not interested in it, and neither is my wallet. But DC, if you do decide to take that, quote, essence of Superman that you're not using right now and inject it into another character, could you send out a memo? Because I think I'd like to read that guy's book. Next up, the Savage Hawkman. I really wasn't sure what to expect with this one. The creators compared it to Indiana Jones fighting aliens, and the first issue delivers on that concept, if that interests you. I'm also encouraged by the revamp of Hawkman's powers that seems to be going on, centering them even more fully on the mysterious properties of the Nth metal. There's great potential for the concept of Hawkman to get a fresh new take. What I would have liked was a slight retracing of Hawkman's origin story, so I know whether or not it's the same as it has been. I mean, Hawkman has his origins in the Golden Age with like the Justice Society characters, but there is no Justice Society, and most of those characters are just totally off the map right now, so I'm not really clear on where Hawkman sits in the DC universe. But hopefully they'll take the opportunity to reestablish that at some point in the first story arc. I wasn't blown away, but this book will bring me back for at least one more issue. Aquaman. Okay, I admit it, I doubted. I hoped, but I doubted that Geoff Johns could work his magic on Aquaman and for the first time create a book that would have me genuinely invested in this character and not just wanting him to be worthy of investment. But he did it, and by means that are so unexpected but completely appropriate. Rather than trying too hard to reinvent the character with new powers that would make him demand respect even on land, Johns plays up the fact that the average Joe on the street in the DC universe thinks he's a joke among the other superheroes. The result is some great tongue-in-cheek laughs, but also almost instant identification with and sympathy for Aquaman. I'd still be excited to see him gain new powers over water. You know, my concept would be like Magneto, except with H2O. But Geoff Johns is already establishing Aquaman's desire to leave Atlantis and his kingly status behind him. Now, that's a pretty big move that probably upsets the apple cart enough for now, especially with long-term fans of Aquaman. So I understand that, you know, if he is planning to do something like that, he wouldn't do it right out of the gate. But I'd still be up for, you know, a power upgrade for Aquaman in the not-too-distant future. In the first issue alone, Aquaman is already a fascinating, butt-kicking character that I care about. And I can't wait to read the rest of this series for as long as it is in the care of one of the comic book industry's best writers. Next up, the Fury of Firestorm, the Nuclear Men. That might even be Fury of Firestorms. I know for sure it's not a typo for me to say men instead of man. The new take on this character concept involves the existence of multiple firestorms. And we get to see the origin story for the two that this book will focus on in the first issue. Although she isn't writing it alone, I can see the touch of master scribe Gail Simone in the dialogue, which helps the book a lot. Some great character moments and baddies that are really bad, as is common for Simone comic books. My only complaint is that things seem to ramp up almost too quickly for my taste. I would have been content to just see Firestorm on the last page and leave the action that follows for issue two. Instead, our main characters suddenly have brand new powers that they already seem comfortable using in combat for like one third of the issue, except superficially. I mean, there's dialogue that kind of indicates they're, you know, like, whoa, what's going on? But they seem to be, you know, handling their powers pretty easily, despite that. I'm also not impressed by one of the bad guys quoting the Bible as he helps kill people. I mean, come on, Gail. I'm not even offended as a Christian, but more as a reader at this point. Bad guys being, quote, Christians is long past being an interesting twist. It's now a tired cliche. Still, the issue was solid, and Gail Simone, whatever her level of involvement, has earned my attention. I'll be back for at least another two issues. The Flash. Now, I'm pretty happy with how this book is starting out. We get to see a Flash that, while still very powerful, is slightly less experienced in the use of his powers. And while I think some characters are at a disadvantage by having their marriages erased with this reboot of the DC Universe, I think Barry Allen being single, with Iris still in the comic, brings a youth, a freshness, and an insecurity to the character that is nice. Barry has not been a very interesting character historically, at least for me. He's not been until recently when he was brought back, written with any kind of, I guess, layers of character. So taking away some of those supportive characters, I think, are going to help define who he is. The art is different from previous Flash books, but the coloring and lightning effects work really well. It's a visual treat on every page and suits the character very well, I think. The story also presents a mystery I'm interested in solving, or seeing solved. Interested enough that the lost opportunities, few though they were, to focus on character in this issue didn't bother me at all. Now, I wasn't blown away by this issue, but I'm a Flash fan, and I really liked it. I'm sure the Flash will be a regular purchase for me unless they really do something to screw this up. Teen Titans. This issue delivered just what it needed to. Great art and action and nicely paced character-revealing introductions to the future key players of this book. Because the DC Universe timeline is being condensed, Red Robin, formerly Tim Drake, you know, Robin of Batman and Robin, Red Robin, who now has a much better costume, Wonder Girl, Superboy, and Kid Flash are all coming onto the DC Universe scene for the first time in this issue. And the chance to get in on the ground floor is a very exciting one for me. The story doesn't start out with the team formed and ready to fight crime. The issue consists of separate, smaller stories introducing each character, slowly connecting them to each other, a little bit like how the first issue of Justice League was handled. Teenage metahumans have a reputation for being reckless, loose cannons in the DC Universe now, and so the government is rounding them up for, well, we don't quite know yet, but these teenagers suddenly have a common problem, and it's clear that they're going to need each other to deal with it. And with the premise set and the quality of the first issue, I am so hooked on this book already. Now, given my disappointment over Superman, I wanted to give Batman, another DC icon, a shot at hooking me in with a fresh take. It was a last-minute decision to go out and get the Bat books this month. I hate pretty much everything Grant Morrison did with Batman. All the Damian stuff, you know, Damian is Bruce Wayne's son, who he didn't know that he had a son, and then it turns out his son was raised by assassins, and now he's back in his life, and so Batman has a son. So just that fact, I'm not really into. I kind of liked the adopted family, if anything, that was being constructed with Tim Drake and Dick Grayson. So the whole biological son, I don't know. It's just rubbing me the wrong way. I'm sure a lot of people don't have problems with it, and I can't give you a reason why it's like objectively a bad thing, you know. But it's just, I don't like it. And the Batman Incorporated stuff, you know, that stuff too seemed to me a far cry from the brooding loner version of Batman that I think works best. I mean, even though I prefer the other guys, you know, Tim Drake as Robin and Dick Grayson as Nightwing and stuff, I still prefer Batman with no sidekicks. I still prefer Batman working alone. Seeing some of that stuff being carried over now into the new DC universe, I decided to give the Batman books one last chance to make these ideas work for me. Although I wanted to read Detective Comics number 1, local stores were sold out. So I'm going to have to wait for the reprint. I probably won't even bring it up on the podcast unless it really strikes me as being very different from these other Batman books I'm about to review for you. But I did manage to snag all of the other Bat books. My first stop was Batman and Robin. Again, more wrong turns, in my opinion. As a new, quote, new reader, again, to the Batman books, I kept asking myself, why is this guy taking his 10-year-old son out to fight crime with him? I don't care how well his son is trained. To me, it's a little bit different, maybe. You know, Tim Drake and Dick Grayson both started being Robin before they were kind of adopted by Bruce Wayne. So I can almost kind of make that work. But this guy starts out as Bruce Wayne's son, and he's taking him out to fight crime. Now, granted, Bruce is a screwed up guy, but his decision to take Damian out with him was not treated as screwed up in this issue. It was taken for granted. Batman also seems to be emotionally, quote, healing from the death of his parents. In a scene with Damian, he says that, you know, it's not important how his parents died. It's important how they lived. And from now on, he's going to replace remembering them at Crime Alley on the anniversary of their death with celebrating their wedding anniversary. What? That sounds more like Superman to me, dealing with the loss of his parents. Batman, the Batman I know, he freaking hangs on to his pain. It's what keeps him paranoid and screwed up enough to zealously sacrifice every ounce of his being to what he does. Remove the perpetually unhealthy emotional condition of Batman and you begin to remove his essence and the reminder of what he of why he does all that he does. One bright note for me is that a mysterious villain is trying to kill off all the members of Batman Incorporated. I hope he succeeds. There are enough Batman knockoffs in Gotham. The more you add, I think the less unique Batman becomes. My hope is that the events of this book, except for the eliminating of Batman Incorporated characters, will in no way be referenced or reflected in other Batman books, or at least that was my hope before reading the others. I'd like to forget nearly every page of this issue. Next up, Batman number 1. This book seems to be a little more bent toward new reader accessibility. The writer cleverly has Bruce Wayne testing out an interface device that gives him basic information on everyone he sees, easily introducing key characters to readers as a byproduct of the plot device. It seems to be mostly a solo book, which is, you know, good for my tastes, with brief interaction with Batman's supporting cast, current and former sidekicks. The story sets up an interesting mystery that I wouldn't mind reading, but this book isn't the reinvigoration of the character I'd been hoping for, so I doubt I'm gonna get the next issue. And then last of the three that I checked out is Batman The Dark Knight. This book felt a lot like Batman number 1. It even had some shared plot points, which was disappointing because the plot was, there wasn't much there. But the art was great and the narrative was cool, at least how they handled what they had, and no sign of any sidekicks. Always nice for me. Again, one of my complaints is that Batman seems to be losing his loner essence a bit. In one scene, he's actually leading a squad of policemen into a tactical situation. In another, it's made clear that Bruce Wayne funds Batman's operations, and this is public knowledge. You know, not only does that take away the loner thing, that smells a lot like Tony Stark, DC. Too much, in fact. I enjoy Batman best when he's an urban legend and a seemingly unstable, driven, semi-psychotic loner who even makes his allies uncomfortable. In recent years, his supporting cast has exploded, shining unwelcome light into the dark corners of Batman's world, and he has struck me as less and less dark and mysterious as a result. After my experience with the Batman books, I still plan to give Detective Number 1 a try when I can get my hands on the second printing that I imagine is coming, but in all likelihood, the Batman stories I want to read are only going to be found in special miniseries or one-shots rather than the ongoing Batman books.
For over 300 years, one story has captured the imagination of millions. One mythical journey has never been more real. A solitary life perseveres on the quest for truth. And though he travels alone, we stand at his side, for his story is our story.
This book contains the secrets of the universe. I'm cursed by a dark power that drains the life from me. That's why I must get to the Mystic City, where the Absolute can purge my curse and recreate me. It's the only way I'll survive.
Do you think of yourself as religious?
I don't know. I'm a man after the truth, wherever it leads me.
Religion is complicated and convoluted. You don't know what you're getting yourself into.
You'll run into many paths near this one while traveling. They'll be crooked and wide.
You have to learn to discern the truth. Sharpen your mind and do not be deceived.
A storm made of fire is coming, and this city will be destroyed.
There's a dark power at work here. This place is called the Swamp of Dread Gloom.
Come back to us, Christopher.
If you keep going this way, you'll have swords at your throat, dragons at your back, and in the end, death.
The choice is yours, Christopher. It has always been yours.
Spirit Blade Productions presents a reimagining of the classic tale by John Bunyan, Pilgrim's Progress. The quest begins at spiritblade.net.
The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word of our God stands forever.
Well, I felt like diverting from our normal look at Romans this week in favor of a subject that came up recently in connection with a couple of people that I know. And that subject is making decisions. How do we go about making those decisions in life that Scripture is silent on? Should I take this new job? Should I get that degree? Should I date this girl? The Bible doesn't give us personalized answers to these questions, and the Christian cliche answer, pray about it, sounds good, and, you know, it is good, don't get me wrong, but it seems incomplete, even ripe for abuse, I think. For example, some folks I've talked to pull out James 1:5 as a proof text for the idea that God will give us personalized feelings, signs, or impressions that provide any answer we need. But this verse, while promising wisdom, doesn't say anything about when or how that wisdom will be received. So, assuming it will come in a certain form or within a certain time, based on that verse alone, is a dangerous way, I think, to interpret the Bible. One friend I talked to last Saturday was in the midst of making a big career path decision. She felt almost completely adrift regarding what she should do with her life. I told her that in my life, I've tried to analyze who I am, what my skills are, and what my purpose in life is, and then look for the scenario that best fits all of those things. She then asked, but isn't there a place for just throwing caution to the wind, diving in and trying something? I told her that I thought there was, but that there are two extremes I think we can fall into. The first would be to act only on the information you have and can understand. Now, if we did that, we'd never get anything done. There's a lot that we do based on incomplete knowledge, just every day. The other extreme is to just kind of trial and error our way through life, following each impulse of the moment until we get lucky. That results in a lot of harm to self and others that could be avoided if we're willing to pursue truth. But I think that's the way a lot of marriages and other relationships go bad, because we're just kind of like going from one feeling to the next. And so there's a lot of pain that really could be avoided if we're just willing to pursue truth, I think. The best route, I think, is to go as far as our reason and wisdom will take us. Then, when we've hit that dead end, ask God to direct us in making the right call. Once we've done those two things, I think then we take that leap into the darkness. There's not much we can contribute to the leaping part of the process. What waits in the darkness is beyond our control. But, you know, is there a way we can develop our sense of reason, our ability to use wisdom to discern right from wrong? The Bible says quite a bit about wisdom and how valuable it is to pursue it. The book of Proverbs is dedicated to developing wisdom in its readers. The Bible itself serves as a kind of filter, I think, that we can pass our thoughts through to see if they contribute to or detract from the agenda God has for all humans. It's been quite a while since I posted my topical index to Proverbs, so I thought I'd share it again. I created it a few years ago. It came out of my personal study of the book of Proverbs. The index attempts to organize each proverb in an approximate topical group, including topics such as finances, relationships, marriage, leadership, and various sins that we all struggle with. Although I have never heard the audible, quote, voice of God, I can say that he speaks to my individual concerns through his word by something as simple as process of elimination. For example, if I'm considering doing A, be it a career choice, relationship choice, whatever, if I'm considering doing A, which is not bad in and of itself, but it will have the side effects of B, which the Bible warns me to avoid, then by being familiar with the Bible's warning against B, I can make the choice to avoid A, confident that doing so is God's desire for me specifically. Likewise, if the Bible encourages, say, D, and choosing C will better enable me to do D, then again, barring any downsides, I can be confident that God is, quote, calling me, an often abused phrase in Christian culture, to choose C. This is the approach I've tried to take with life decisions, big and small, and I hope that the index that I posted on the blog is a tool that you guys can find useful as you also aim to seek the truth. If you want to look at that, at the topical guide to Proverbs that I put together, go to spiritblade.net/blog and look at the post for September 30th, 2011. spiritblade.net/blog. I hope that's helpful to you guys. Well, I thought I had mentioned this in a previous week, but I didn't put anything about it in the show notes, so I'm assuming I forgot. But I got a review from Jerron, a listener of the podcast, and he's also the mixer on DSI Files, Unlucky 7, which just came out. But he sent me a review of Faith Like Potatoes. It's a... It's a Christian film, but it didn't quite, because it didn't have like a sci-fi, you know, fantasy or horror kind of like speculative fiction type of spin to it. It didn't quite fit the show, but I was still happy to post a link for it. So if you guys want to check out a review that somebody put together for a Christian movie, someone in our community that put together this review, you can go, actually I won't read the whole thing to you. I'm putting it in the show notes. It's a YouTube link, but you can check that out if you've ever heard anything about the movie Faith Like Potatoes, want to know something about it. Check the show notes, and you can check out a video that has a review of that. Let's see, what am I forgetting? We got the big sale going on, which actually is not going on. I don't even know why I mentioned it. By the time you listen to this, it's going to be over. Actually, between you and me, even though I said till the end of September, I'm not turning off the sale prices until sometime Monday morning. I'm not guaranteeing that you at all that you can get these sale prices anytime on Monday. But I am gonna, just because I'm lazy and I don't want to get on there and change all the prices, you know, until Monday. So you know, you could probably squeeze in taking advantage of some of those. It's all our digital download audio dramas are 50% off, and I think the song bundles too, 50% off. So, go to spiritblade.net/store and check out all the huge discounts going on with our downloads right now. Like I said, I won't be changing the prices back to normal until sometime on Monday. So, you got a little extra time. That's what you get. You get little bonuses like that for listening to this podcast and me nattering on and on. Anyway, so that's it for my month of covering DC Comics. So if comic books are not your thing, welcome back to kind of the normal fare next week of the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. I've got some great user stuff listener stuff that you guys have sent my way. Reviews and other geeky stuff, and I've got some more author interviews, some more Christian sci-fi fantasy authors to introduce you to coming up, a bunch of stuff I've just kind of been waiting and really excited to share with you guys that this month has just kind of prevented me from doing because of the big stuff going on with DC, but I'll be getting back to that next week. I'm really excited. So guys, have a great week. Thanks again for listening to this thing, and don't forget to seek the truth.
Visit www.spiritblade.net. Peter is a crazy freak. Green Lantern is awesome. Visit www.spiritblade.net.